You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Focus doing. Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo back here with Sam Monson. It is show three of the week, because this is what we're doing now. We're going Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So welcome to the Thursday edition of the PFF NFL podcast.
It's a brave new world, Steve. New season, new format, new show, extra show.
More things to say.
Yeah.
You know, we just needed more time. We have to get more takes out there.
Buttons on the way.
So just to remind you, during the season, we'll have a review podcast on a Monday, a preview podcast on a Thursday. Wednesday will be a little bit more willy-nilly, free-for-all.
Yeah.
And hopefully the daily. With some guests.
And the daily.
And we've got the Daily five times a week. The Daily's got some good topics this week. We talked about Urban Meyer and the Jaguars, whether or not we should be panicking just
already.
Yet.
Yep.
What was it today?
Cam Akers.
The Rams. Injury. The Sony Michel.
Cam Akers.
The Sony Michel.
The trade. For Sony Michel to fix the running backs. And generally, this is the approach the Rams have taken to their own draft picks.
Yeah, some Rams really. Theory stuff. I mean, there's all sorts of good stuff. So there's plenty of Steve and Sam and Steve. All over the place. Don't forget, the Josh Allen sweepstakes is over.
Yes.
We appreciate everybody for donating. I will be wearing Allen jersey.
Whoa.
It's over.
No.
Just end it.
No. We don't stop the count here just because we've reached the target.
You turn the GoFundMe off.
There is a stretch goal that you committed to in text form, which means it's a legally binding contract. If we reach $10,000, we launch your 280-pound ass to a table.
Wait. Thank you for rounding down. Are people still donating?
Yeah.
It's still going?
Now, we're doing a bad job of like putting this places. It's your pinned tweet, right?
Yeah.
So if you go to @PFF_Steve on Twitter, it is Steve's pinned tweet. We are also going to start adding it to the descriptions of the podcast and on YouTube, so you can copy the link there. Go to the GoFundMe and keep donating. We've reached our $2,000 goal. So Steve will 100% guaranteed be signing the Josh Allen apology form in a Josh Allen jersey. But if we get the high rollers out there, the whales, the guys with the big, you know, checkbooks, if we get those guys cooking, get 10 grand, then we're going to launch you through a table at the same time. And frankly, everybody wants to see that.
We'll see.
Except the one guy who was concerned about your health as you approach middle age.
I'm also concerned about my health, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. One other thing, Kickoff 30. If you guys don't have your PFF subscription for the season yet, Kickoff 30, 30% off any PFF subscription. You got to do it right now, because you do it right now, it's August 26th. You don't even have to worry about, you know, going and buying the draft guide during draft season or anything like that. It's 365 days of access. If you buy the subscription today for 30% off, you have everything you need for PFF for this year, for draft season, and probably for your fantasy draft next year. So I think looking at it through that lens is helpful and favorable. So kickoff 30, kickoff 30 at pff.com.
And the fantasy draft kit is awesome. Like, that will get you from zero to up and running and ready to draft in a heartbeat. And as you say, not only will it get you, you know, most of the way there to next year, depending on when your draft is, like, we're adding stuff all the time. Like, you get the new stuff.
It's always getting better and better. So PFF Elite, PFF Edge, both at pff.com. Kickoff 30 is your promo code. All right, so we've got for the show today just some general news and notes and quotes to respond to. So let's just talk some ball here. On our extra show, it was Ian Harditz yesterday, our fantasy guru here at PFF. We just had a good football slash fantasy discussion with him. That's how a lot of the bonus show or the third show is going to be looking, right? We'll get somebody at PFF and just talk some ball.
Yeah, we're going to bring in some, you know, new voices to the show, get people from other podcasts within PFF and kind of introduce you to those guys a little bit and just talk some football with them.
Great.
We'll also be getting to bold predictions later today.
Oh, we do have bold predictions. That's
which
right.
I like, because your previous bold prediction was Hall of Famer Corey Davis. So frankly, if these are good, this can get us years of mileage.
What if I'm going to go back to the Corey Davis well?
I mean, is that bold anymore?
I mean, it based off his first 4 years in the league, it might be.
But based off his preseason, you know, it's an undersell.
But we don't over. Anyway, let's just we'll have some fun with it.
All right.
So first off, let's start with Denver. Teddy Bridgewater's named the starter. We have discussed this a ton here. You want to touch on it quickly? Is this the right move for Denver?
So, I think it's an interesting move because, one, they've done it already. Like, what's the incentive at this point to name it now? So that's one point. Two, when you look at Denver's schedule...
What do you mean, what's the incentive? Well, you name your starter before the season.
Right. When is the season?
2 weeks.
Okay. So why do it now?
The team needs to know.
The team needs to know.
Yeah, the locker room.
The second point, if you look at Denver's schedule, they open with three very winnable games. Like, games where you look at it and you say, Denver are clearly the better team and the better roster top to bottom. And I think that should actually influence who you... Because the two quarterbacks are very stylistically different, right? Teddy gets talked about as this game-managing style of quarterback, which I don't think is actually that accurate, but he's certainly closer to it than Drew Locke is.
He's got the style, just not always the execution.
Right, but he has a much narrower band of potential outcomes in a given game than Drew Locke, right? Who could go anywhere from, like, utter train wreck that has no chance of anything functioning to really high-end, a bunch of big-time throws in there, and Drew Locke elevates everything. Bridgewater, I think, is much more tightly banded in terms of how his performances will show up. And when you look at those first three games, you're like, okay, here we really just need a guy that won't screw it up, right? We are a better side than any of these first three teams, which means all we need is for the quarterback to go in there and not run it into the ground. We've got the Giants week one, we've got the Jags week two, and we've got the Jets week three. I think they're looking at those games and saying, we need to be 3-0 after that stretch, because then Baltimore, Pittsburgh, like, it gets tough pretty quickly. And do you really want to take the chance that Drew Locke will have three straight games where he won't, you know, run this thing into a mountain?
I really think Vic Fangio just looked at it straight up like he outperformed Drew Locke. He's our guy. They
Did
also
he,
traded for Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, but look what they traded for.
Yeah, but they traded for him with the thought that he's going to be able to compete and probably be better than Drew Locke, given both of their relative histories.
I mean, given what they traded for histories. Him, that's like... We have Drew Locke. We need some kind of contingency beyond nothing.
Contingency one.
Right.
Contingency
so,
one
but,
out.
But I think you're... I don't know that this is a validation or an endorsement of Teddy Bridgewater as, like, the season-long starter. I think... I mean, this could genuinely just be, look, that first three games, we need to be 3-0, and which quarterback is more likely to get us to 3-0 for those three games. After that, you get a tougher schedule where you have Baltimore, Pittsburgh. Like, at that point... Is a game manager good enough? Like, honestly, you might be looking at this team that starts flipping quarterbacks throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, it is. I'm just looking at the Broncos QB history using PFF grades here. Of course, you can go through PFF Elite Premium Stats. We just mentioned with the Kickoff 30 promo code, the highest season quarterback passing grade for a Broncos QB since their Super Bowl year, including their Super Bowl year, right. By the way, of 2015. Case Keenum. Remember, Case Keenum was their 2018 bridge to nowhere.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of bridges to nowhere so far. Case Keenum, 66.9 passing grade. That was right in the Teddy ballpark last year. So Keenum was a 66.9. During the Super Bowl year, Brock Osweiler, 65.5. And then Joe Flacco, 2019, 65. And then Drew Lock's 2020, 63. Even Peyton in the Super Bowl year was just a 60. Everybody else below 50, including 2 years of Trevor Siemian and a chunk of Brock Osweiler play. So just giving the background and the history, the Broncos are coming from poor quarterback play, to say the least, since Peyton Manning fell off his cliff. I think Teddy Bridgewater can give you the 70 to 75 passing grade, distribute the ball, and do a fine job in this offense.
What does that get you?
I don't – look, when you talk about like Austin Gale from the new Tailgate podcast, formerly 2-for-1 drafts, he made the statement, oh, you know, this is going to – you know, maybe this is going to keep the Broncos from getting the next quarterback. And I know that's all we tend to talk about here. Like, how do you – you either tank or you're going for it, right? I mean, there's no in-between. But is there actually an in-between world in today's NFL? Well, is there an in-between world? And can the Broncos – what if the strategy is not actually to get in position to draft? It is to continue to build this good roster. Technically, their roster is good enough that if Teddy plays at the high end of his distribution, they're a playoff-caliber team. They're a playoff-caliber team. They could get into the playoffs. And Austin said – the Broncos are going to play well enough to sneak into the playoffs and blah, 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 whatever. They're going to miss out on a quarterback. But what if the strategy is actually not let's either tank or win a Super Bowl? What if it's, yeah, let's play good football and be ready for Aaron Rodgers and be ready for Deshaun Watson and be ready for Russell Wilson trade rumors? What if because of the landscape of the NFL that we keep talking about here and the capable starting quarterbacks around the NFL, it's not go get a guy in the draft necessarily. What if you want to pounce on the next potential star that could be out on the open market when that hits?
So they're an interest because the narrative a lot of people are throwing around is this move has been made because people are trying to save their jobs, right? Patton comes in, he's got to be safe, right? Now he comes in large part because John Elway has been unable to find an answer at the quarterback position. And rather than like fall on his own sword, Elway went, okay, I'll just promote myself. Appears to be how this functioned, right? Which is a different, it's an interesting strategy. Usually the, you know, the noble way out of these things is, yes, I accept my responsibility for this failure and shall ritualistically sacrifice myself in penance. But Elway went, no, I'm just going to promote myself and we'll hire somebody else to do it. Hell of a gig if he can get it. So Patton, you would think, has got some real estate to run through here, right? Like this is his first run at this. Everything other than the quarterback has been a fantastic like run so far. Still hasn't found an answer there. But Fangio, this we would think is Fangio's decision, right? It's his team in terms of head coach. He's the guy making the call about who's starting. And he would be the one guy who is on a warmer seat if they suck, right?
Yeah.
Denver is bad this year. All the attention's going to Fangio, not anybody else. Because Patton's just in the building. Elway's already promoted himself. He's out of the firing line. All attention goes to Fangio, right? So he's the one guy motivated to make a move that raises the floor, not the ceiling, right? And I think that's what you're talking about here is one guy elevates the floor of how bad your team could be. The other guy potentially elevates the ceiling, but sinks the floor. Like his range of outcomes, Drew Lock, this is all over the map. But his floor, like his ceiling, is I think unquestionably higher than Bridgewater's, based off what we've seen from Bridgewater, frankly, in his career, but certainly since he came back from that knee injury. But the difference is now. So if my point is, if all you're shooting for is saving a job, this makes sense, right? If all Fangio is interested in is I am still in this gig this time next year, I think Bridgewater is the move to make. That being said, if what you're shooting for is like, what's the best move for the future of this team? Because probably neither of these guys is the answer. But I would say certainly Bridgewater isn't. There is still a glimmer.
There's a chance that, yes, Drew Lock is the next guy going forward.
And
there's at least a chance.
Critically, even if you think like this season, Bridgewater might be able to get you to the playoffs, but Bridgewater can't beat the Chiefs. Like Bridgewater can't beat the Bucs in the Super Bowl. Like, when you look back at the Denver teams, the Denver team that dragged Peyton Manning to the second championship, right? there wasn't a Kansas City in the NFL that they had to get past that year. You know what I mean? There wasn't a team with a dominant freaking like Patrick Mahomes out there who you knew was going to be sitting there in the AFC Championship game waiting for you to
the Patriots
hurdle them. I mean,
they had an Edelman. Well, a banged up Edelman Patriots offense.
Right. The Patriots were like 12-4 that year. Everybody was 12-4 except the Panthers, essentially. And the Panthers were in the Super Bowl. But my point is, there was no guaranteed juggernaut that you knew you were going to have to play a certain level beyond to clear to even get to the Super Bowl, let alone win one. I think this team has to factor in that, okay, we might be able to get to the Super Bowl or get to the playoffs, rather, with a Teddy Bridgewater-led team. But God knows we can't beat the Chiefs.
Alternatively, the coaching staff, and I admit, it's not like every coaching staff is perfect in their evaluations. They just watched Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Locke compete for this job.
Yeah.
And they determined that this Teddy Bridgewater that you say has no ceiling and there's no future and all that stuff, that's the guy that beat out Drew Locke. Beat him out for the job. So clearly they're like, hey, this dude outplayed Drew Locke. The guy who, to your point, if it truly was a toss-up, you might lean to the guy that you know less about, just in case he's better than what we've seen. But after all those reps, after all that, Teddy Bridgewater wins it out. So now, as much as we like to talk about, got to get a top 10 pick, you got to draft the next quarterback, you got to have hope and all that stuff, maybe, just maybe, what the position Washington's in, the position Denver's in, where you've built this really nice roster, and then you're either going to continue to grab a mid-tier quarterback and elevate him with his supporting cast, or you're going to be ready to pounce once there's another quarterback. The other thing I'll say about Vic Fangio, smart people, I think, that have looked at how what he does on the defensive side of the ball. Excuse me.
Uh-oh.
The coughing fit.
Uh-oh.
What Fangio brings. Hold on. Hold on one second.
Now would be a really good time to have those cough buttons that we don't have yet.
Can we get a cough button in this place? I'm okay.
Okay.
It's live TV. You just roll with it.
Yeah.
Appreciate everybody that's live here on YouTube. Bear with us. If you look at the job Vic Fangio's done,
yes,
you should be able to separate what he's done from being saddled with poor quarterback play.
Oh, absolutely.
The quarterback play, he's had Joe Flacco.
I'm not saying it's
he's
right.
He's had Drew Locke.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's right that he would be blamed if this season sucks. Like, when you get to the end of the year and you've won five games and you know, end of season recrimination meetings are happening in the building, I would think it's a pretty strong argument to roll up there with your PowerPoint and say, I was given these two as an option to start at quarterback with this otherwise really good roster. This is not my fault. That being said, the other people in that room are going, well, if it's not your fault, that means it has to be my fault, and that's not happening.
Well,
so,
no, because if you're George, new GM, it's the other guys. It's Elway. It's those guys that
this
did
was
it.
A previous problem we
yes.
were just dealing with.
Yes.
I'm just saying, like, it's the kind of thing where, I mean, maybe you come out of that, look, we're 5-whatever, and at the end of the season, it's really bad, but we don't actually believe anybody deserves to go because of this. But generally in the NFL, when things have gone terribly, somebody gets fired for it, right? Like I say, there is a sacrificial lamb. So somebody has to pay the price in blood. And if somebody has to pay the price in blood, it's a case of, like, who in this room is going to fall on the sword? And, you know, I'm not doing it, so it's you.
Broncos are going to be a good competitive team this year. Hashtag fun to watch.
The one point I would make, though, look, I don't really care how they've played in practice, right? For all I know, we're not privy to those practice reps. Teddy Bridgewater may well have been the better quarterback in practice.
Yep.
But in preseason so far, Bridgewater has been better. He's got the better PFF grade, 83 versus 66. But Drew Locke has been more productive. It's been, again, it's the high variance, right? He has had a higher level of yards per attempt. He's been more aggressive downfield, almost 2 yards per attempt, higher average depth of target. They've each got one big-time throw. Locke's got one turnover-worthy play. Again, it's what are you chasing for? What are you trying to get out of this? And Locke is the guy that can unlock, pun intended, the KJ Hamlers, the Jerry Judy's downfield threat, like the plays that are going to move the needle for you to hang with a team like the Chiefs.
I agree with you there. And my argument for Drew Locke is, when you watched him at Missouri, if you watched him as a true freshman, you're a big write them off as true freshman type of guy.
Sure.
You love to watch a good true freshman and be like, this dude's trash, he'll never be good, forgetting that they're 18 years old and they get better. Drew Locke, started as a freshman in Missouri and literally got better every year. I mean, he was grading in like the 50s as a freshman,
right,
up to the 60s, up to the low 80s as a junior, high 80s as a senior. You saw progression with Drew Locke. I have an unsubstantiated theory that there are a lot of players who just develop like that at both levels, right? They just, they get better in college, but they almost kind of like start over. There is a chance that Drew Locke is that guy in the NFL. It just takes some time to acclimate, and then his production matches his tools.
And to his credit, he did take a small step between year one and year two.
He did.
His grade was better.
And by all accounts, he said he's most improved at like pre-snap recognition, yeah, and all that, for whatever it's worth, if you want to read into those quotes.
His grade was, you know, 5 points better year one to year two. His big time throw rate jumped, it like doubled from year one to year two. The concerning point is the turnover-worthy play rate stayed the same, like exactly. His average at the target went up. Like, there are data points that says Drew Lock is heading in the right direction. It just isn't going as fast as you wanted to. Like, if, you know, this is, it's preseason, it's the season of hope, fans are looking for everything. If you want to construct an argument that Drew Lock is on the right trajectory, you can create the same picture that people had about Josh Allen, right? Now, Josh Allen had one of the most unexpected leaps we've ever seen from a player at any position at any level. So it's not a strong argument, right? But the point is, and he also, he had, you know, a draft status different to Drew Lock, which, you know, gets him more time.
There was a difference, though.
You, of course, there's a difference. But I'm saying, if you want to construct that argument for Drew Lock, you can make it. I don't think you can even make the case that Teddy Bridgewater has this like untapped, you know, ceiling that we're going to reach this year.
You know what people forget, though? Because I was going to say, the difference is when Josh Allen went in, for whatever reason, the offense was better. Like, his actual performance wasn't great, but even in the 2 years he didn't grade great, they were better. He had a rushing element, and everybody in the building loved Josh Allen, and there was a lot of talk that, like, we believe in him, he's the guy. For whatever that's worth. A year ago, though, we were talking about Drew Lock. He was 4-2 as a rookie.
Yeah.
Right? And it was
optimism.
Similar. He didn't play well, but they still put up points. They didn't even put up a lot of points, but his stats were better than his grades. They were 4-2. So there were similarities there, but there was never really that like groundswell that Drew Lock is the guy, like there was for Josh Allen. There was a belief that Josh Allen was better than he had showed, and then he went and
proved it. But how much of that is just like Josh Allen was taken 7 overall, Drew Lock was taken in the second round? Like, if Drew Lock had...
There's elements of that, but there's also truth to it too. Yeah. Like, Josh Allen was taken 7th overall because he does have Elway-like tools.
Yeah, I mean, look, Drew Lock is not Josh Allen in terms of physical tools, but he's a pretty toolsy guy. I'm just saying, like, if Drew Lock had the number 7 overall pedigree to attach to his name, how much would
another
the narrative be different?
Here.
The other point I would want to make, we'll get to this when we do our bowl predictions thing, but Denver might legitimately flip-flop a quarterback all season long. Like, if you want to game this out and say we are saddled with two strains of disappointing at quarterback, but one of these guys...
Such a Teddy hater.
One of these guys is better suited for specific opposition. Like, if we go into a game in a given week and we believe we are the better team, we are better than the Jacksonville Jaguars, Teddy Bridgewater is the quarterback we want leading that game. Because at that point, your job is just don't screw it up. If we're facing a team where we believe they are better than us, the Chiefs, the Ravens, right? If we're facing one of the better teams in the NFL, Drew Lock's the quarterback.
You would play two quarterbacks based off, oh man, that would be game changing in the NFL.
This is what I'm saying. I believe Denver's quarterback situation is
that is
ugly.
Not happening. There's no chance that happens.
Why not?
I just don't see it.
Denver's quarterback situation is ugly. It's not helping, but they are very different, and they are probably stylistically better suited for specific opposition.
I'll tell you why that's not going to happen in a second, but I got to tell you about our friends over at Fantrax. Fantrax is free. Fantasy Football League Manager is the most customizable, easy-to-use, and feature-rich platform in the entire industry. PFF is gearing up to play our leagues on Fantrax this season. If you're coming from another site, it's not a problem. They can import your current leagues completely free. Fantrax also has multi-team trades, and we love the bonus points for touchdowns of different yardage. You can create a free account now using promo code PFF at fantrax.com/PFF. Get a chance to win a trip to any regular season game this year for you and your entire league, plus $6,000. Where would you want to go, Sam? Maybe Cincinnati. There's a promo code. It's promo code PFF at fantrax.com/PFF. So before, I also want to respond to one thing. I'm looking at the YouTube chat. Somebody's asking about our fantasy products. Why would you buy fantasy stuff from PFF? Well, it's because we got the most extensive football database in the world, and our fantasy experts take that database and glean fantasy insights off of it. That's why you would use it. I mean, that's why people that use our products win their fantasy leagues a lot, or at least compete.
But it's the same data that all 32 NFL teams, 100 plus college teams,
right? Why do they
are paying for? It's because that data and the things that we do in terms of grading, right, to actually quantify what happened on a play or what should have happened on a play versus the outcomes, like these are things that provide an edge that don't exist from just scraping box score numbers or scraping like data points, right? So the NFL pays for that additional edge. The same data goes into the fantasy products, and with data scientist guys like Eric Eager and George and their team, they're able to take this data and generate edges on the fantasy products just like the NFL teams are.
Yeah,
like the whole point is we collect a whole bunch of unique information that nobody else does, and you know, a lot of people complain about it because of the subjectivity it brings into it, but that subjectivity is where the edge is. And it goes into everything we do. It goes into the NFL products that teams pay for, and it goes into fantasy products. So when you look at some of these things, it is objectively better than other things you can pay for.
I like it.
Because of that data.
So that's why Kickoff 30% off is a good deal. So before that, I wanted to tell you why the QB thing isn't going to happen. You think Vic Fangio is going to go in front of his team.
If you come back to me with some feelings thing.
That's you. You can't being, put the feelings aside. You're Mr. Touchy-feely guy.
You can't use that argument. That's
yes,
my
I can.
Argument.
So then you can't come off your touchy-feely stuff. You're telling me Vic Fangio is going to go in. Guys, it's Jaguars week. Teddy, you're getting the call. Why is that, Teddy? You're a little more consistent. Feel a little bit better about what we're going to get from you. I don't think your ceiling's that high, so we don't need to score that much. We're playing the Jaguars this week. Hey guys, it's Chiefs week. Drew, you're getting the call. You know why? I don't know what I'm going to get from you. I might get 7 big-time throws. It's going to be great. I need you to go head-to-head with Mahomes. We're either going to lose 45-42 or 45-0. We don't know what's going to happen, but Drew, you're getting the call because you're more volatile and crazy, and I just don't know what I'm going to get.
You, of all people,
nailed it.
Can't use that argument.
Nailed it. Pre-game
can't do
speech.
It. You are Mr. No, I don't care about touchy-feely. I do the best thing for winning. That's the best thing for winning.
I do the best thing for winning. I also agree. I think there are... If you and I are the Broncos front office and we're having this legitimate, serious conversation, Teddy's going to get us in this range. Drew Locke's going to get us in this wide range. So we've got to play the ranges, the higher range against the – I mean, it's a great theory and all that stuff. Vic, go implement that. I acknowledge that is a tough thing to actually implement in a locker
room. Here's why that doesn't matter, right? Because generally speaking, you don't want to do things like that because you will – unsettle, upset, whatever it is, the starter, right? The guy who's supposed to be the number one, who you don't want to damage his confidence, right? Here, you've got no confidence in either of them anyway. That's why you're doing that. And the guy that you're giving that week to is going to have high confidence because you're like, hey, Drew, it's your week this week. You're going to start. Previously, you'd been sitting on the bench because we don't think you're good enough to beat, like, you know, the Jags without screwing up. Now, it's your time to shine, Drew. We believe that this week you give us the best chance of winning. So Drew's going out there on cloud nine, believing that he can take down Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. He's happy. Teddy Bridgewater might be in a pit of despair, but it doesn't matter. He's sitting on the sideline this week. Next week, you're like, hey, Teddy, it's your time. We're going to go out there and we're going to beat up the Jets. And Teddy's then on a high. The guy you're picking is constantly buoyed by your turning to them in that given week.
Ridiculous.
And overall, it doesn't matter that they're both upset because you're getting rid of them anyway.
I appreciate your theory, Sam. I think that would be... I mean, I'd like to see it.
Oh, wait till we get to both predictions. I got more.
I'd like to see it happen. Before we get into the Lamar stuff, Mac Jones is getting a ton of hype right now. And I just want to tell you what's happening right now. The Patriots and Giants are, you know, they're doing one of those, you know, joint practices. It's the second joint practice, I think, for both teams. John Middlecoff, who does radio, podcasting, various things out on the West Coast, former NFL scout. I'm stealing this from John on Twitter, but he said the NFL should be broadcasting these things, these live practices. I cannot agree more. These things, if you had the live practice, yesterday Mac Jones dropped back like 52 times or something with the ones against the number one defense for the Giants. He went 35 for 40, by the way. I don't know how many sacks and various things. 35 for 40. Again, for whatever that's worth. But you telling me I would watch that way before I would watch, you know, a couple preseason snaps of the starters. Give me that in a game-like setting with Brock. Like, we watch Senior Bowl practice. Give me joint practices.
And that's more dropbacks than he's had in two preseason games combined.
And it's more telling. And I think teams are also becoming smart. They are valuing those controlled joint practice reps and saying, I don't need to rep it out in the preseason. We're going to do it.
It's kind of surprising they haven't already. I mean, college teams broadcast their like spring games, right? The intramural practices that they do, you know, like offense versus defense. They broadcast those. Those are on TV.
My Twitter right now is all Patriots and Giants beat reporters. Busted coverage by the Patriots secondary resulted in a long touchdown from Daniel Jones to Anthony Pettis. Jones finished the drive with a 2-point conversion. I want to watch all of this. I want to watch every last second of these joint practices, and I think they'd be great. All that said, Mac Jones has looked good in training camp, preseason games, and now yesterday's practice where he had to take all the number one reps because Cam wasn't there, and he goes 35 for 40. Again, for whatever that's worth, like, is Mac Jones going to be the starter?
We've been talking about, you know, has Mac Jones done enough to like win this battle during preseason? And the answer is probably not. Like, he's done everything he can do, but up until this week, Cam Newton hadn't done anything to lose the job, right? He was fairly anonymous the first week of preseason, barely played. Second week, he actually played pretty well. So at that point, you're like, well, that just reset the bar slightly higher for Mac Jones. And I still think it's a close run thing now, but Cam Newton's probably going to open the season a starter. Then you get this miscommunication or misunderstanding or whatever it was. Cam Newton leaves the sort of bubble of the facility, goes to get some kind of medical procedure done outside, and now has to come back and wait 5 days before he can re-enter because it seems like he's unvaccinated. And that's what happens to those guys with the current protocols. So all of a sudden, he's opened the door for Mac Jones to take all those first team reps, 50 a day, and really challenge for the job with the ones and see what he can do. He's getting essentially a week of practice as the number one guy, which is just another like test that the Patriots have been able to put in front of him and say, is he capable and ready for this opportunity? So Newton has just opened the door for Mac Jones to win that job. And so far, judging by reports, he's done exactly the same thing in these practices as he's been doing in preseason, at which point I think it becomes a very live discussion about whether he starts week one. Because now you're reaching the point where you're like, okay, it really looks like Mac Jones is ready to be the quarterback. So what is the virtue of keeping Cam as the number one?
I would say the virtue of keeping Cam, though, is the run game element. I was also intrigued, as much as we like to say, look, players are generally going to land at the level of play that they should be. I've used the Cam example in 2018 where he started off kind of hot, had the shoulder injury, regressed at the end of the season, and he essentially regressed into his career baseline. Like, guys find their career baseline overall. But I'm going to use the opposite argument that maybe Cam last year, in a season where you didn't have training camp, a completely new system, it's the Patriots system and all that stuff, I was kind of expecting Cam to be better this year. Plus, having better playmakers, having a couple tight ends to throw to in the whole thing. So I think the passing attack with Cam Newton or with Mac Jones would be similar if you put either guy out there. But I think the Cam element of the run game could be... So this is my general take, right? Similar pass game, QB run game with Cam with that great offensive line and all those running backs. However, I'm also kind of buying into the Mac Jones hype. After what we saw at Alabama, what he's doing right now as a rookie, I'm kind of buying in. I might talk more about that in my bold predictions as well, but I'm buying like all the hype right now on Mac Jones and Marquez Callaway and all these guys around the league.
The thing is, I don't really care about the run game because the Patriots have assembled this like this dozer of a run blocking offensive line. They are just going to go out there and bulldoze any defensive front that's in front
of them. But Cam adds more to it on the goal. More like it's just all short yardage. Right. You can make short yardage automatic. You could also just use Cam in those situations.
Right. But the point is they're going to like steamroll anybody that's in front of them anyway, whether Mac Jones or Cam Newton is a quarterback. Cam Newton definitely adds an element on the ground. but is it an element that does anything for you at this point? Like, you're already going to be one of the best run rush teams in the NFL, even if Mac Jones is the quarterback. So now all the focus goes back on the pass game, and you're like, well, where do they stand relative to each other? Last season, Cam Newton's passing grade was 68. This preseason, Mac Jones has a grade of 90+. So, okay, if we expect
Cam
Newton...
Wait, what's Cam this... If you're going to use this preseason, Cam's good too.
What is he?
He's an 80-something. 83. Anyway,
but so. The point is, if you're expecting Cam Newton to be better this year, well, how much better is he going to get in that area? Is he going to push that to 75, right? That feels like a reasonable jump and a rational place to expect him to go, 75. So now it's a straight question. Like, is Cam Newton or Mac Jones going to be better than 75 as a passing grade? I mean, I don't know, but I think at this point, Mac Jones looks absolutely like he can get there.
Yeah, I agree. And Cam, you know, again, he's been just okay the majority of his career. Not so good. Just okay, and then unbelievable that 1 year.
What we're talking about is the potential of a two-quarterback system. Mac Jones gets the start. Cam comes in for the short yardage, goal line, you know, tricky situations where you need that extra matchup weapon.
I mean, if Mac Jones is a starter, I'm with you. I would use Cam in short yardage if he'd be willing to buy into that now that he's a backup.
What's he going to do? Say, no, I'm not going out and running QB power on fourth and one.
Got to tell you about our friends over at DraftKings, because the NFL, it's back. We're here. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is giving all new players a can't-miss offer for Week 1. Bet just $1 on any NFL game during the first week of the season and receive $200 in free bets instantly, no matter what. Take advantage of this limited-time offer now. Head to DraftKings Sportsbook app. Go get these great promotions, and you get some daily odds boost. You can make every game a big game with their same-game parlays. So what you got to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code PFF to receive $200 in free bets. This is a no-brainer. You place the $1 bet on any Week 1 game. That's it. It's promo code PFF. Get your free $200 in free bets instantly for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. All right, this Lamar quote that we're going to discuss here. Somebody asked if the league, I think it wasn't even a question, it was somebody else around the league said.
Jeremy Fowler was reporting that team or people have been telling him or asking him, or that phrase has been coming up when he's been talking to people, I think was the thing that started all of this.
That the league will figure out Lamar Jackson.
Yes.
I don't even know what that means.
Well, that's part of the problem, right? That's why it's such a ridiculous media shitstorm.
Will the league figure out Lamar Jackson this year? I'm going to pose the question on Twitter and tell people to come listen to our answer.
Oh, God.
Because this was posed to me on Titans Nashville radio this morning. Our friend Ramon Foster, former NFL offensive lineman. The example I used, I don't think the league will figure out Lamar from an athleticism standpoint or anything, right? So it's... Is an NFL player, I use this example with Ramon, he probably, like if you go up against an Aaron Donald or whatever it is, you're practicing against the scout team that entire week, and you know that Aaron Donald is quick and strong and all these different things, but when you actually get to face him on the field, it probably still looks faster than you thought or stronger than you thought, and he's still really, really good. I think Lamar has that element to him still, right? You put, when you're preparing for the Ravens, you take your fastest, you know, you take a fast wide receiver five and you say, hey, run these option plays and give us a look, right? Give us a look for what we're going to see this week. Let me see Lamar Jackson's speed. Give that look to my defense. But Lamar Jackson's speed and quickness and elusiveness still makes people look stupid. Yeah. He still breaks angles in the NFL. I don't think that changes. So the NFL is not going to catch up to Lamar Jackson's athleticism. So my answer is that the league will not catch up to Lamar. Only Lamar will dictate whether or not he's up at that MVP candidate or if he's just an 80, you know, for PFF terms, an 80 graded quarterback, a good quarterback. And it's going to be all about Lamar and his passing development.
Yeah. Look, I think we need to level set with exactly what this phrase means, because when whoever it was saying it to Fowler and he repeated it and reported it, it's like, this is absurd. This only gets talked about in regards to black quarterbacks. Why are we not talking about the league figuring out Josh Allen and all these kinds of things, right? And it becomes like its own world of loaded language. I think there is a real discussion to be had about, like, the league. We're not going to be 2 years from now. There's no scenario where in 2 years time, like, Lamar Jackson is now a backup quarterback because the league has neutralized everything he's good at. And, like, now all you have is this freaky athlete that isn't really capable of, like, elevating any kind of offense, and you can't function with that, right? That's so the league is not going to figure him out to the point where he's useless, right? He's not a starting caliber player. The question becomes, are NFL defenses going to be able to react enough to Lamar Jackson based off more information, more experience, more duration of defending him to make him less than what he has been so far, or to reduce his effectiveness to the point where he is not a top tier quarterback, right? Or phrased another way, like, is he even capable of getting back to the level he was at when he was a unanimous MVP? Is that within his range of outcomes anymore now that NFL defenses have had more time to adjust to what he brings to the table? And I think that is a real discussion. I think it is also a real discussion for Josh Allen, right? Can he reach that same level again?
I think the Lamar thing is different because the Ravens are running a different offense, though. That's why the question's posed, Sam. I don't even want to get into it. I don't think it's as loaded as people might say. It's because they're running a different offense. Now, you could say the same thing for any young – you could say the same thing for Josh Allen. Will the league catch up to Josh Allen? But what does that mean?
Forget Josh Allen on the basis that he – like, maybe Mahomes is a better example, right? Because Mahomes does unique, freaky things that shouldn't work, right? When you look at what Mahomes does a lot of the time, and this is part of the reason he slid in the draft to where he did – is you're looking at this and you're saying, this is 100% what you coach people not to do. You're like, this should not work. The idea of, like, rolling miles into the backfield and off to your right and then flinging the ball back in the opposite side of the field to a Tyreek Hill or a Travis Kelce who's uncovered, like, this is what Brett Favre used to get panned for doing, right? The Sidney Rice interception that cost him the NFC Championship game, that was that kind of play. And you're like, no, what do you – don't do that. That's the thing you coach people not to do. Mahomes does that every week, and it works. So I think it's fair to say, well, will the league figure out Mahomes, right? Because he is playing in this unique way, and the Chiefs lean into it with what they let him to do. Is there a scenario whereby after a couple of years of this, teams figure out how to slow that down in a way that they haven't so far?
Let's go through all of them. Lamar, Josh Allen, and Patrick Mahomes, and how you would attack them and everything. I think the Lamar thing is driven by the history being, say, like RG3. When RG3 had his great rookie season, the football team, Washington, was doing different stuff. They were using the QB run game a lot. They were running more zone read. Alfred Morris became a star back because you took the Shanahan system and you just changed the arithmetic with the quarterback run game. RG3 was a star off of play action. And there were very specific schematic elements that elevated RG3's game that particular year. You could make the argument that the Ravens, if you're just breaking down their offense, Eric Eager does these really good things, right? Where he just looks at offenses and defenses and just says, based off what they do, how are they clustered, right? And the Ravens are always in their own world. Most NFL offenses do a lot of the same things. Similar route concepts, similar route depths, similar play action percentages, all that stuff generally ends up in the same bucket. And there's probably 6, 8, maybe 10 teams that are on the fringes, on outliers. The Shanahan system's always in that world, and the Ravens are in their own world. So I think that's the question. The Ravens are running this different offense,
right?
With Lamar being a design runner 8 to 12 times a game. Can the league adjust to that now that they've seen it for a couple of years? And what is that adjustment? Is the adjustment do everything you can to take away the run game and make Lamar throw? And this is why my answer is the league cannot figure out Lamar if he throws the ball the way he did in 2019, which was, hey, we're going to run empty and I'm going to make quick decisions, throw the ball accurately and all this stuff. If he continues to develop as a passer, I think, you know, it doesn't matter what teams do a whole lot.
I think generally it is a schematic question, but one that is almost always posed to athletic black quarterbacks just because they're the ones that open up this world of different scheme, right? Like, you can also look back and pose the same thing about Chip Kelly's offense when it was the Philadelphia Eagles and the stuff that they were running, and ultimately the league did figure it out, but it was never posed as a, has the league figured out Nick Foles? Because we knew that Nick Foles wasn't the thing that was driving that. It was just, he was the quarterback within the scheme,
right,
that was showing something different to NFL defenses. And once NFL defenses had experience of that and it didn't evolve, they were then able to shut it down. The difference between that and the quarterbacks that this gets thrown at is Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray and some of these other quarterbacks that bring unique skill sets to the table.
That's their skill set.
They are like the foundation piece that allows that offense to be different in the first place. So when you're asking, like, will this system be exposed? Will this system be found out? Will they catch up to it? It ends up being talked about, will they catch up and will they figure out the player? Because we know that's what's driving the scheme. But ultimately, like, it's not really up for debate that Lamar and that Baltimore offense has become less effective. Like, it's worse than it was when he was an MVP, right? That's fair, right?
Natural regression. They were so dominant. Yeah.
So the question is, can they get back to that level, or has the NFL reached a point now where they will prevent it reaching that state? They're just better equipped to slow down what Lamar does. I think that is up for discussion, because I think we've been saying it all offseason, we don't yet know what it is that's limiting this offense. Is it the fact that the offensive line doesn't have the talent that it had when he was an MVP? Is it that they don't have an elite number one wide receiver that can get open at all levels of the defense and give Lamar just better looks in the passing game? Or is it that NFL defenses have caught up to the scheme generally and are just better equipped to slow it down? I think that is still a very live question, which is why I think if you sort of take it down to its bare bones and take the kind of question for what it is, I think it's a fair discussion to have. It's just, it gets co-opted and loaded with all this crazy language.
I think Lamar's going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah,
I think it's a fair question. Is he going to get, are we going back toward MVP Lamar,
right,
or just very good?
Will Lamar be figured out to the point where he is no longer a viable starter? No, not a chance. Will Lamar continue to be figured out to the point where he will not get back to being an MVP, like the most dynamic weapon and unstoppable quarterback in the NFL? I think that's more of a debate.
All right, so let's put this on Mahomes and Josh Allen really quick. What would you do to stop Josh Allen? Because I've seen this discussion too, right? I know how defenses tried to adjust last year. They tried to play more zone. I think it's fair. With Josh Allen, as much as his deep passing was poor in, say, 2019, much like Joe Burrow's deep passing was poor, it wasn't because he was incapable. He has a big arm, and he's been good throwing the ball down the field before, and last year he was so much better. I think it might be a similar answer for Mahomes and Allen, but I want to make both of those guys play the short game, make good decision after good decision, keep it soft, and bend but don't break. I mean, all of these somewhat cliches, but it's an actual style. I want to make Josh Allen put together a 12 to 15 play drive, play zone, throw the ball underneath, and stay patient and patient and patient. Because Allen still has high turnover-worthy play percentage for a top five quarterback last year.
I want to, flood the zones. Invite them to run. I mean, I think that
invite to run was, yeah,
I think that was a good strategy. Like, literally flood the zones, get eight guys in coverage, invite them to run the ball, take the ball out of those guys' hands as much as humanly possible. And when it's in their hands, force them to try and beat you with 1,000 paper cuts, which also gives you the benefit of having eyes on them when they break contain and they try and make plays with their legs as well, which they're obviously incredibly capable of doing.
How would you slow? I'm just tweeting right now.
You're just like tweeting this entire show.
Yes. Say, get people. You're like, hey, here's the topic we're talking about. How would you slow down Josh Allen? We're talking about it. And then you tweet the link, and then people click on it and they watch it, because we want people to be live here.
I see.
Watching us. We'll be live here every Thursday at about 10:30 Eastern time. Right about, give or take a couple minutes, but set your schedule for 10:30 on Thursdays. Yeah, so that's the bottom line with Allen. He is not used as a designed runner. His running ability is more as a scrambler, and that's the other point with Allen, is to slow him down. If you're playing man coverage, that's when those guys, your backs to the backs to the quarterback, you could take off a little bit more. So playing that zone coverage would help quite a bit with Josh Allen. Now, we already talked last show where it was just you and I. Mahomes is broken. He's over. He's done. Mahomes is regressing back to Texas Tech Mahomes. What would you do strategically to stop and slow Patrick Mahomes?
Kidnap Tyreek Hill.
That's it?
Yeah.
All right.
Uh-huh.
Kansas City Chiefs. What would you do to stop the Kansas City Chiefs would be the same thing. Right answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a tough one because it is a really good mesh of, you know, that the play caller has a history of success, right? There were games last year, and we always, because this is what we do here, we have to bring context. One of the games last year where the context was needed was Mahomes against the Patriots. He had something like a 40 PFF grade, but there were two jet sweep tap passes that went for touchdowns, so the passer rating ended up over 100. The stat line at the end of the day looked great for Mahomes. And I this is why there's a difference between stopping Mahomes and stopping the Chiefs. I would say there's not – Mahomes is awesome, but I don't think the Ravens have this. I don't think the Bills have this. If you slow down Josh Allen, I don't think the Bills' offense has success. If you slow down Lamar, I don't think the Ravens' offense has success. Mahomes' stats, when he grades below 65, 60 as a passer, are still good. They're still like above league average. So slowing down Mahomes isn't even the question. It's slowing down this entire offense, Mahomes plus the offense. And I think my answer is to try to make Mahomes make all those highlight reel plays. And if he does it, you tip your cap, but try to actually make him make those plays outside the pocket.
It's easier than ever to try and take away their best players, right? Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, they have less depth than they've ever had behind those guys. So you can, I mean, you're stressing a defense out hugely, but you can effectively like bracket both guys on any given play, make sure they're both sort of out of it, and then force them to go to number three, to number four, to whatever it is. And in the past, that was Sammy Watkins, and that's when Sammy would go off for like 12 catches for 170 yards and wreck a defense. Now it's Mecole Hardman, it's DeMarcus Robinson, it's nobody that you trust to have that huge game. And this is the sort of Bill Belichick world where I think you say, look, if DeMarcus Robinson beats us for 150 yards and two touchdowns, fair play. But don't just give up the 200 yards to Tyreek Hill because you didn't go out of your way to take that off the table. Like, make them go to plan B. And if plan B works, fine, but force them there.
I was rewatching the Super Bowl just a little bit the other day. Couple plays that, just to remember, that happened. This was one of the rare times where Mahomes didn't play well and the rest of the offense didn't step up. To your point, the Bucs did a really good job of taking away those top two guys. Don't forget, remember Mahomes had that scramble left, chucked it, and actually put it onto Tyreek's helmet, and he dropped it in the end zone. And there was another play with Kelce, same thing. I think it was a third down. He scrambled right, puts it on Kelce's hands on a play that he should just not make. This was actually one of the rare times where Mahomes, everything around him actually let him down. He didn't play well, but when he did make those spectacular plays, they let him down. That's why they only scored the 9 points or whatever it was. I think I would lean toward just trying to take away the first read as much as possible from Mahomes and making him play outside of structure, and that's when we've seen teams at least have some success against the Chiefs. You want to get in some bold predictions, Tom?
Yep.
All right, we each have four bold predictions. As you start yours, I'm going to tweet this out because that's what I do, right? You get to tweet out bold prediction segment.
Okay.
So why don't you start with your first bold prediction for the 2021 season?
People have been writing them off all offseason, including us. But the Steelers are going to win the AFC North.
Wow. That's bold.
Mm.
Now, when we do, are we going to have an official preseason prediction show?
I don't know.
We might. We might need to have one. That's a pretty standard preseason show. So are you going to stick with the Steelers? Or is this like, this is my bold take, which could happen?
Probably just or the bold. No, this is not like, this is not what I think is going to happen, definitely. These are bold takes. These are like your Corey Davis is bound for the Hall of Fame take.
Right, like we're forcing you to say something a little extreme here.
Yes.
We're not holding you to it necessarily.
This is the thing that I think has a plausibility of happening as an extreme scenario whereby if it happens, I will look like a genius, but I wouldn't put money on it.
But if it doesn't, you're like, it's just a bold take. They're just forcing me to say something crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's fair. I am talking myself into the Steelers thing.
Look, if that offensive line is okay, they have weapons. Ben Roethlisberger is capable of playing better than he did last year, and the defense is still nasty. Like, they are going to be really good. And they're in a division where, you know, do we really believe in the Browns? they're the Browns, right? Are they going to run away and win 15 games and take
this the
division?
This might be a real prediction.
Right? And then the Ravens. It's like, okay, they'll be good, but they have wobbled. They haven't been as good as they were a couple of years ago. And they'll be, like, these teams will all be taking games off each other. So, like, Pittsburgh are well capable of hanging in there and sneaking just enough wins to top the division.
Yeah, the comparison I've made all offseason is last year the Packers looked like they had a terrible offseason. They had a draft that didn't look like it was going to help. Steelers feel similar this year, but they still have Big Ben. They still have dudes to throw to. And the offense, but I'm buying into the preseason. Again, the offense does look different, right? We'll see if the Steelers can keep up their great defensive performances from the last couple years, though. That remains a question. All right, my first bold take. Mike Evans is going to break Randy Moss's touchdown record this year. And I would even make this if it was a 16-game schedule. So Randy's got, what, 23?
Yep.
Single-season touchdowns? Mike Evans, the way the Bucs... Mike Evans played a lot of last year, banged up. And the way the Bucs target him in the red zone, the way him and Brady, they ran fades together, slants, the whole deal. I think it's going to be Brady to Evans like crazy in the red zone this year. He's going to break Randy Moss's touchdown record.
Yeah, 13 last year. Nobody last year was within five of Moss.
Yeah. He got an extra game.
Uh-huh.
Now, the one thing that would hold this back is Brady also obviously has a lot of dudes to throw to. So he's got Gronk, but he's also seemed to like Antonio Brown in the red zone as well. So that'd be the one thing to slow Evans down. But I thought the Bucs did a lot of creative things to target Evans in the red zone. He also dropped a couple in the end zone. I mean, they had the opportunities will be there for Evans to break Moss's record.
I think they would need to have an offense sort of comparable to that 2007 Patriots offense for them to just have that number of touchdowns to pass around.
They could. I mean, if Brady doesn't regress at all, they certainly could.
Yeah, I mean, Brady's going to need to throw over 50 touchdowns for anybody to break the Moss record.
He just has to throw for at least 23.
No, he's going to need like 50 for them to break that record.
There might be too many weapons, but this is why it's bold takes, not lukewarm takes here.
So. Yeah, all right.
It's your turn.
At least one team is going to use a legitimate two-quarterback system for an extended period this year.
Can you let off the table?
No. And I'm not going to talk. I'm not talking about just the Taysom Hill package, right? Jameis wins that starting job and Taysom Hill plays the Taysom Hill role that he's played for Drew Brees. I am saying one of these teams with this two-quarterback dynamic or the quarterback competition is going to legitimately find a way of using both of them at the same time. Whether it is the New Orleans Saints with Sean Payton's love for Taysom Hill being too great to prevent him just putting him on the bench and using him in the Taysom Hill package. Whether it's the 49ers who think that, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo is the best bet to win right now, but Trey Lance brings too much to the table to just be nothing. And by the way, the commitment to him is too great. Whether it's the Patriots who use Cam Newton in the red zone as just a cheat code, but Mac Jones is a starter. One of these teams is going to wind up using a two-quarterback system. Denver.
Well, you're really sticking to that.
Yeah.
Now, you didn't watch college football back when Steve Spurrier was the Florida head coach.
No.
He had the one year. I think it was Jesse Palmer and who else was it? Oh, man. Doug Johnson. Remember Doug Johnson? Both guys played in the NFL. Uh-huh. He literally would switch them play to play.
Jesse Palmer and Doug Johnson are contemporaries?
Yeah.
They're like different eras in my brain.
Well, Jesse became, a TV star and everything. Yeah. Right?
But I remember him as Giants backup.
Yeah, Jesse Palmer, right. Giants backup, Doug Johnson, Falcons backup.
Okay.
So they had Danny Werfel, and then it's Johnson and Palmer, and they would go play to play.
That's insane.
And, they didn't have headsets back then. You couldn't call plays. Can you call plays in college now? Or is it still signals? I know. So Spurrier would give the play to the quarterback and run him in, and then the other guy would come out, give him the play, run him in. That'd be the worst if it's I'm going in for my handoff, right?
Yeah.
And, what if the other guy gets two passes in a row and you get two handoffs in a row? It's even more QB controversy. So you're not expecting that level of extreme, right?
But look, in the NFL, it's been done. Bill Walsh used to do it. He would have insane – his way of easing Joe Montana in was to, give him the red zone, right? They would, Steve DeBerg or whoever it was doing the tough job, getting them to scoring position. But then, we got to – give Joe the advantageous position. It's house money here. We're already scoring with a field goal, so just do what you can do inside the 20. the Cardinals ages ago when they had Leinart and Kurt Warner. Like Kurt Warner, I can't remember which one was which, but they did the same thing, I think. One of them was a red zone quarterback and the other one was moving it between the 20s.
Now, I do wonder, as much as I trash your let's start a different guy every week thing.
Not every week, just depending on the opposition.
That's the variable that I'm struggling with, right? The other, the what you're saying is tap into different skill sets for various quarterbacks, have a red zone guy. I'm kind of for that. The more we've talked about the level playing field of the quarterbacks in today's NFL, if you had a, say, I wouldn't do it with Breeze the way the Saints did it, because I still think Breeze is just so much better than whatever Taysom Hill brought to the table. But if you have a less than quarterback, a QB 15, QB 25, and you have either a running quarterback or a power running quarterback or a deep ball, whatever it is, tap into different skill sets. I could lean into that.
How are you okay with that, but swapping them for different opposition isn't cool?
Because within the flow of the game, you know before the game, you're like, listen, you're both going to play. Uh-huh. We're going to do things situationally. Yeah. You're going to go out there, and it's just like telling a defensive end, hey, this is your play, and you're going to go execute the play.
How is that different from doing it on the same, exactly the same way, but like in a game-to-game
because
level?
You're saying, I'm going to tell my quarterback, hey, we're playing a good team this week, you're playing. We're playing a bad team this week, you're playing. First of all, you can't use that messaging in the NFL. You can't.
You just don't phrase it that way.
Players aren't stupid. They're going to know, like, oh, I'm starting against the 0-10 team. You're starting against the 10-0 team. What? Of course they're going to know what the intention
is. There's a difference between knowing what the intention is and saying, hey, you're going to start against the teams
that
suck.
The other part of it is, as an NFL head coach, I said this on The Daily, but with Urban Meyer, your job as an NFL head coach, and the thing Belichick does really well and the best coaches really do, is literally treat every game the same. And it's why Belichick has all these crazy quotes. It's like, hey, you're playing the 0-16 team. It's like, well, they're really good at this and this and this and this.
But Belichick also does this at different positions. Like, he has cornerbacks that will start one week and not the next because they're facing different styles of offense. We are going to run a man-heavy defense this week, so take your seat on the bench. That Belichick does that at corner. How is that different from saying, all right?
Because you're not using style.
You're telling me you can't cook up a stylistic argument for like why this change.
If
has
you're
been
telling me stylistically, hey, we're playing the Jags, they play a lot of man. I need my Teddy or my man guy.
Dress it up that way. Like figure out a schematic reason for doing it. Not we're facing a team that sucks.
So what happens when you face a good team that plays man? Teddy, I thought I was your man guy, coach. No, Drew Lock is this week.
If the biggest argument against this idea is you can't craft a narrative to tell the quarterback that the reason you're doing it this week, that's just a bad argument.
There is a different dynamic to quarterback too.
Particularly if you're okay with doing it in the game.
It's a bold take, Sam. It's why it's bold.
We're in the red zone now, so take a seat on the bench because we don't believe you can score without throwing the ball to a linebacker. You're fine with that. But, you can't tell him you're playing the Jets this week because we don't trust you not to throw the game away.
No, because your job is to keep the team even keel and treat every team the same. That's your job as the head coach.
Job is to win the games. However you feel gives you the best chance to do that. Do it.
Bold take, Corey Davis, 100 catches this year.
Is that even bold?
Yes, he has a career high of 65, including the playoffs.
Right, but now he's going to a team where he's the number one wide receiver and they're throwing him a million targets in the preseason.
You're right. Corey Davis is good enough that having 100 catches is not that crazy. Maybe it's not bold enough.
Six guys had 100 catches last year.
Now, my initial bold
another game
is that Corey Davis would have 1,000. Where is he at right now?
That's a lot bolder.
He's at 222, including the playoffs, which shouldn't count. I'm going to say, he gets closer to that this year. He gets closer to the 1,000. So all we need here is, say with 4 years with the Jets, if he just averages 100 a year, we're at 622 four years from now. And then it's like, it's in sight.
What is?
1,000.
Oh, 1,000.
1,000 catches for Corey Davis.
I mean, kind of. It's quite a long way in sight.
100 receptions this year for Corey Davis, my bold take.
Kind of the same way, when you're standing on top of a mountain, you can see a town that's like 50 miles away. It's like, I mean, it's in sight, but you're not getting there anytime soon.
But we're not even seeing the town yet. After this year, though, we'll start to see some clarity.
Oh, now you don't see anything. But even in your scenario of four straight years of 100 catches, you're now standing on top of the mountain seeing the town in the distance.
Yeah. And he's 8 years into his career, and he's, just stick around another 5 or 6 years. You got this thing.
I don't know that you're either one of these predictions. This is looking great.
These aren't bold?
I'm just, I mean, if he gets anything like the workload.
You predicted the AFC North champion from last year will win the AFC North.
Yes.
Right? Did they win it last year?
Or yeah, they still did, right?
They won. That was your first bold take, was this team will repeat as AFC North champion.
Yeah.
That was your.
Is anybody else saying that?
That was your bold take.
Right. Is anybody else claiming that?
My first bold take was that Mike Evans would break a record that stood since 2007.
Yeah. That one was
so fine. You predicted something that happened last year will happen this year. I predicted something that happened 15 years ago will happen this year.
Yes. I'm not criticizing your first bold take.
You said my first two were bad.
No. I'm saying your Corey Davis one for the Hall of Fame and your Corey Davis one for this year.
Oh, fair. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
All right, your turn.
What have I got?
Bold take number three.
The Rams are going to miss the playoffs.
You really believe this, huh?
I mean,
this is your
in the bold take world of, let's say, something that might happen.
Can we cut this for social media?
Everybody is hyping them up. This is the year where Sean McVay's offense gets unleashed from the albatross that was Jared Goff, and now he's got Matthew Stafford out there who's capable of making all the plays he needs to make. They're going to put up all the points. They're going to go to the Super Bowl again. Boy genius is back. No. Matthew Stafford isn't going to be any better than he's been every other year of his career. He's going to make a ton of spectacular plays. He's going to have a 5-game run where we're talking about him as the best quarterback in the NFL. And the rest of the time, he's going to be Matthew Stafford. The Rams' offense hasn't taken a step forward. The defense has taken a step back. Everybody else in the division is better. Rams are going to miss the playoffs.
You're talking me into it here. Just like yesterday, Ian's point about Kyler Murray having Lamar-like fantasy production, for whatever that's worth, but that type of passing, rushing production, touchdown production. Cardinals are dangerous. Seahawks are dangerous. Niners, with a healthy quarterback, whether it's Jimmy Garoppolo or Trey Lance, and a healthy receiving core, they're dangerous.
Yep.
It's possible. I'm more on the not the Stafford side of it. I'm on the defense regression side of it. That losing Staley, losing two key pieces in the secondary and John Johnson and Troy Hill comes back to bite the Rams a little bit. It's not crazy. I mean, I've been on the Rams overhyped wagon. I'd still put them in the playoffs, though. But that's why it's bold.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go. I've been reading the Twitter, and I'm in. Patriots to the AFC Championship led by Mac Jones this year.
Wow.
My bold take. Mac Jones has taken the Patriots to the AFC Championship.
Starting when? When does he come in? Week one? Week one starter? Leads him the whole way?
Tom Middle, Brady 2.0? Who do they play week one? It's the Dolphins again? Middle of week one.
Middle of week one.
Cam's going to get benched.
Cam's going to get benched in week one?
Yeah.
That's harsh.
Cam is just not going to have as many opportunities as last year when it's not Jarrett Stidham behind him. Right? Was it Stidham? Oh, it was Hoyer. Hoyer and Stidham. Cam's not going to have as many opportunities this year, so if he screws up, boom, Mac Jones is in.
Paint the picture for me. What happens in his X snaps against the Dolphins week one?
Okay, ready? Right. Here's what really happens. Patriots lose week one.
Uh-huh.
Patriots are losing week two.
Okay.
Cam Newton's still the starter. Cam Newton rolls out to his left. He's rolling. He's about a yard beyond the line
against
of scrimmage.
The Jets in week two.
Are they playing the Jets?
Mm-hmm.
Gets popped by – are they really playing the Jets?
Yeah.
This is perfect. C.J. Mosley.
No.
Pops Cam Newton. He's got some chest injury. It's not good. It's toward the end of the game. Patriots are losing. Mac Jones comes in. Not a lot happens, but Patriots are 0-2. Mac Jones starts week three. Cam starts to get healthy. Big question in the Boston media. Like, who's going to start? Is it Mac Jones? Is it Cam Newton? Patriots start winning week three, week four, week five. Still some controversy. Hey, you get Cam Newton, you got Mac Jones. And Bill's going with Mac Jones as the starter for the rest of the season.
There wouldn't even be controversy, though, if that was happening. Like,
well,
was
it wouldn't
winning.
Be because I'm replicating the Drew Bledsoe situation, yes, where Bledsoe had the massive contract and Brady was a sixth rounder. Of course, as soon as Cam gets hurt and Mac Jones comes in, like, he's in.
Yeah.
But
unless he stinks, there's no controversy.
So week two, Cam Newton gets hurt against the Jets. Mac Jones takes over from here until 2040.
<That's right.
laughs> The Patriots go to the AFC Championship
with Tom Brady 2.0.
And they're going to lose to a team.
A team, okay. All
we'll
right.
call it the Chiefs.
I like
AFC
that one.
Championship.
All right.
Bold.
Yeah. Ryan Fitzmagic.
Here we go.
God knows how many years he's been in the league at this point. What is he on? His like 14th team. Never made the playoffs. Fitzmagic this year doesn't just make the playoffs. He goes on a run. Magic time shows up in the postseason, and he plays in the NFC Championship game. Now, I'm not sure what happens in the NFC Championship game.
Fitzmagic in the NFC Championship.
Fitzmagic is getting his team to the NFC Championship game.
Yeah. It's bold.
Yeah.
It's bold. It's what it's intended to be.
You're telling me that Fitzmagic isn't going to show up in the postseason if he finally gets there.
Maybe he's Eli.
Decades into this thing.
Years of never making the playoffs. But when he's there.
You're telling me the moxie isn't going to rush to the surface and him just ball out in the postseason.
It would be awesome. It would be awesome to see. You're saying NFC Championship? Who are they going to beat along the way here? You don't know?
I don't care.
Doesn't matter. All right, being bold. So in the same year of hypothetical bold takes, Mac Jones and Ryan Fitzpatrick are Final Four QBs here.
Mm-hmm.
And they lose to the Bucs and the Chiefs, respectively. And it's just Brady Mahomes again. Brady Mahomes. 5, 6?
Somebody asked on Twitter, was it Coleman? Asked how many more like AFC Championship games, or how many more Super Bowls, rather, between Brady and Mahomes do we need before that's a bigger rivalry than Brady-Peyton?
Wouldn't that be incredible for Brady when you look at his career?
Yeah, if he's like the nemesis of four different quarterbacks over the course of it.
I mean, Brady's the winningest playoff and Super Bowl quarterback if you take out the first 10 years of his career. It's really absurd. Anyway, that'd be funny. So as a quick aside, I have a couple of sides before I get into my last bold take here. I think the landscape of the NFL could be crazy once Brady's gone. And I thought this more before Mahomes emerged. But will the Chiefs win so many Super Bowls? Will they win just so much that it looks like a Brady era, or it looks like the Niners, the Cowboys? Like, will you have that dynasty that you always seem to have, which is QB driven, apparently? Or are we going to get back to, remember 10 years ago, it's like, all you need in the NFL is a Joe Flacco caliber quarterback and they go on a run and you win a Super Bowl, or an Eli Manning and they go on a run and they win a Super Bowl. In other words, there's going to be, because Brady's won so many Super Bowls, there's not a lot of types of quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls. Types meaning different levels of skill or styles or whatever it is. There's not a lot of types, as in most of the championships have been elite quarterbacks because Brady owns so many of them recently. But are we going to go through this run where, like, you get a rookie contract quarterback, you get Lamar gets one, you know, Josh Allen gets one, or whatever, Andy Dalton stumbles into one. I don't know what's going to happen. Like, what's going to happen in the next 10 years, and how does that change our perception of team building?
Well,
because it's going to be so varied. Or will Mahomes just dominate the next 10 years?
The post-Brady landscape is going to be fascinating. But the other aspect of this is, like, when the hell is the post-Brady landscape going to start? I mean, Brady, he keeps saying things that sort of change, you know, the timeline. Recently, he said something like, look, as soon as I don't think I can win a championship, I'm out.
Yeah.
But as long as I think I can win a Super Bowl, I'm going to keep playing. And as of now, again, like, there is no sign, none, of this decline coming. So at current rate, there is no timeline for when Brady is going to walk away, because he is going to be a Super Bowl caliber quarterback for an indeterminate length of time. So we might be looking at this and saying, well, when Brady leaves, Mahomes is going to get, you know, 8 years of a career, and how many Super Bowls can he rack up in that time? Mahomes might have like 3 years of a career left by the time Brady walks away, having won one Super Bowl, right? And you're like, well, what is that now? So that's the first question, is how long are we going to get subjected to this Brady dynasty keeping going? Then you have, well, all right, in a post-Brady landscape, does Mahomes just take over and win a bunch of Super Bowls? But you're in this world where, like, winning a Super Bowl is ridiculously hard. Brady has broken the barometer on what this is supposed to look like. Like, if you think about how close we are to Mahomes being, like, three in a row, right?
Yeah.
AFC Championship game, they were pretty close that year. Super Bowl, and then offensive line falling apart prevents him winning a third in, like, in the Super Bowl. he could easily have three championships already. As it is, he's got one, and that sort of shows you how difficult it is to do this, because you're subjected to these small quirks of...
When you're great, I use the get on the green example a lot. For them, for a great quarterback, getting on the green is like getting to the championship game. And then there's a pass here and a play there that might dictate the titles.
And Brady's a great example of how that works, because, you know, for the first decade of his career, you can kind of you can move a few plays here or there and take him to like all the Super Bowls or none of them. You know what I mean? So he sort of split that difference and has all the championships that he had. But in that world post him, does Mahomes get the same rub of the green? Does he get none of the rub and end up with just, you know, a Rodgers career where he's always been phenomenal but has one championship to show for it? Yeah, it's going to be a weird world when Brady finally lets other people play the game in the Super Bowl.
Because it's not just Brady too, right? So it's Brady's had most of them, but since 2000, we clearly define Brady, Breeze, Rodgers, Peyton as the four guys for an extended period of time that were elite. And Peyton had two, even if he was dragged to one, and Rodgers had one, and Breeze had one. So the majority, half to most of the Super Bowls were that elite tier of quarterback. I was kind of looking forward to a world a few years ago where all those guys are gone, and even the second tier of quarterback, as I always say, is fuzzy, and it's wide open. And so maybe Mahomes skews that. Maybe Russell Wilson kind of gets back in the mix, or Lamar or Allen. Maybe they become these clear elite quarterbacks who are always on the green, so to speak. But I was looking forward to this wide open, and maybe it still happens in a couple years. So,
Even just removing the one guy that's winning them all and just having it be a collection of quarterbacks that are all vying for the championships would be more, there would be more intrigue in that than one dude just breaking the thing. Like, even if you take Brady out of the equation and just go with the other Mount Rushmore quarterbacks, right? Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, like, those guys have four between them.
Right.
That's nuts. Like, those guys were they're right up there with Brady in terms of how good they've been over the last decade and a half or however long you want to go. And yet Brady has all the rings and those guys have four of them between them. Like, if you just took Brady out of the equation and said, now what does the distribution look like? Now each one of those guys probably has three or four.
They have a couple more or whatever it is.
Yeah, so maybe that's what happens in a post-Brady world, that Mahomes ends up with three, Russell Wilson gets, you know, two or three, and that's what it looks like.
Big Ben had two early, lost in a Super Bowl as well. It did, you know, it just never got evenly distributed through the years. All right, my last bold prediction, and then I got to vent really quick on that ESPN stat. The Chiefs and Chargers. I'm going to say that the Chargers are competing for the division title in the AFC West. The Chargers, remember a couple years ago, the Chiefs haven't just completely dominated the West. In 2018, the Chargers were right there with them when Phillip Rivers had a very good season in 2018. They beat the Chiefs down the stretch. That was Mahomes' first year as a starter. But the Chargers had 12 wins or whatever it was that year. They were good. I'm gonna call a year like that, where the Chiefs don't just run through the AFC West, but my bold prediction is it's the Chargers in the AFC West giving them a run for the title.
7-9 last year for the Chargers. Significantly more points against than they scored.
Call that coming down with Staley and
right.
Health. Health is just as big as Brandon Staley coming in for the Chargers.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I don't hate that.
The CPOE stat from ESPN. It is,
to
me,
not just them, by the way.
Like, what's that?
CPOE is a general analytics stat that's out there, not just theirs.
It's not just theirs. So it's completion percentage over expectation. And I believe it's just funny because we do a ton of advanced analytics here. It's what we do at PFF. This is one of those examples where I think advanced analytics actually makes us dumber. If you use it in a small sample size, if you use completion percentage over expectation on 20 dropbacks or 30 dropbacks, as ESPN did in this graphic, it's actually not advancing the conversation. It's making it worse.
What's the use case that they've done that's upset you?
So completion percentage, the point of completion percentage over expectation is, every pass has an expected completion percentage. When you throw the ball further down the field or into a tighter window or whatever it is, it's obviously a lower percentage chance. If you throw a quick screen, it's a higher percentage chance. And then instead of just saying you're 1-for-1 or you're 0-for-1, you put it against what the expectation is for those particular passes. So ESPN showed all of the rookies in the highest CPOE so far during this preseason. And it shows Trevor Lawrence as the top quarterback in expected completion percentage over expectation, or completion percentage over expectation. He's the only one who's above expectation. Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, all slightly below expectation. And then Trey Lance, well below expectation, minus 18%, which means Trey Lance should have a completion percentage that's 18% higher based off the throws that he made. It is a well-intentioned stat. It makes a ton of sense. But because it is so dependent on receivers, because it is so dependent on drops and the types of throws that you make, in a small sample size, it is skewed. It's more volatile than just completion percentage. The example being, like, Mac Jones, his three best throws were down the field and dropped.
Yeah.
He's one N'Keal Harry drop away from being going from fourth on this list to probably first, because one of his most difficult passes fell incomplete and it would have completely skewed his CPOE if it was just caught. So in regular completion percentage, it's just 0 for 1 versus 1 for 1. It's actually not that volatile in a small sample size compared to this, which is just all over the place. And it's creating this false narrative because it's just off, man.
It's like all of these, it's like all data points, to be honest, that you, none of them are perfect. They all have flaws. They're all skewable by various outside factors. What you need to do is to be able to present them correctly and not sort of not lean into the fact that you can skew these data points and try and paint a false narrative. And the problem I have with something like CPOE is it is used as a proxy for just accuracy, right? Completion percentage over expectation, therefore...
It should never be.
Right. Yes. Therefore, this is a description of how accurate or not the quarterback was. But because it's subjected to drops and all those kinds of things, it isn't. It's like passer rating, right? Which is, passer rating gets a lot of crap, but it's actually not a bad metric in terms of the overall efficiency of an offense, of a passing offense, rather. It's just that when you use it as a quarterback number, it's terrible because it's all these other things factoring in there, right? Like average depth of target, whether your receiver drops it, whether your pass blocking holds up. It's all these other things that impact passer rating. So when you just say quarterback had a passer rating of 120, therefore he was great, no, maybe, maybe not. CPOE is the same thing. It is not a proxy for just quarterback throw accuracy, but it is a pretty good representation of whether your passing offense is firing on all cylinders and functioning versus where it should be.
Now, I'll also say our guy Tej, one of the R&D folks over here, Tej has done accuracy over expectation, which uses our QB charting data, which actually would give Mac Jones credit for that example
right.
play. Trey Lance is the other guy who's had 7 or 8 drops or whatever it is so far. So he's destroyed in this particular metric. When a running back drops a screen pass that probably has an expected completion percentage of 99% and you get a zero for it, obviously it has nothing to do with accuracy or anything, as you're saying. So that's my only issue. I think it's one of the examples where a small sample advanced stat is actually worse than the stat it's trying to be better than, which is completion percentage. The other part of it is the quarterback dictates his situation, right? This doesn't always happen in sports, right? In baseball, as a hitter, you don't choose to hit with guys on base or with nobody on base. And in football, even, you don't get to choose which coverage you play as a corner or when you rush the passer as a pass rusher. As a quarterback, you choose whether to throw the ball down the field or short or whatever it is. So you're actually choosing more difficult passes or easier passes and all that stuff. So it's a stat that's dependent on your choices to a point.
Yeah.
So again, in isolation, it has its weaknesses.
I just think, yeah, if
all that said, all the small sample stuff does.
Right.
To your
if it's presented correctly and not, you know, deliberately used to paint a false picture, I think it's fine.
Famously, 2014, I think it was, Ryan Tannehill was our highest graded quarterback through 2 weeks, I believe it was. And he had 1 week of a good game and 1 week where the stats were horrible and he had some bad luck or whatever. I had to explain all across the landscape, the media landscape, why is Ryan Tannehill the best quarterback in the league? It's like saying a guy who hit 500 the first week of the season is the best hitter. Like, it's going to – you're two throws away from being 15th. I mean, it's all – everything's volatile in small sample sizes. In this particular case, I just think completion percentage is actually less volatile than the advanced stat, which is a difficult thing to do. Just had to get that off my chest.
All right.
Educate the folks.
Okay.
Have some fun.
Well, it's just a therapy session here. That's what we do.
So the Wednesday the Wednesday pod is going to be a little bit more quick hitting, right? We got some guests. We'll talk about something like we did yesterday. We were under an hour. Now we're back up to our 90-minute range, and this is what the people want. They want us just rambling about all sorts of fun football topics.
Yeah, the Wednesday one, we are gonna ballpark at an hour generally. Yeah. We don't, I mean, the
give or take an hour, but about an hour
in the season. Our preview and our review show, those are going to be pushing 2 hours because we have, you know, up to 16 games to get through. It's a grind. There's a lot of stuff to talk about, and then all the other stuff is going in that Wednesday show in addition to the extra PFF guest. But even with all that, there is less information, there is less content, so that's going to be around an hour.
Perfect. I love it. So thanks to everybody for tuning in. It's our Thursday show again. We'll be back next week, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, talking all things NFL. Don't forget to get to PFF.com. Kickoff 30, kickoff 30. You're 30% off any PFF subscription because they're awesome and you need them. 365 days of access. Thanks, everybody. See you on Monday.